Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
And in Ireland, as opposed to Scotland that has, say, over 100 distilleries, there are three distilleries in Ireland.
That's beverage director at the Uptown Cafe, Brad Dunn. Those three distilleries produce a wide variety of Irish whiskies. Today, he takes us on a tour of four of his favorites in advance of St. Patrick's Day. Harvest Public Media looks at the origins of genetically modified foods. In the kitchen, Chef Daniel Orr prepares a delicious black-eyed peas salad. And we visit the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market. Not only is this the first year vendors are accepting food stamps, organizers are offering sort of a two-for-one deal. More about that coming up. Mia Partlow starts off every show with a look at the latest food news headlines. Welcome.
Two of the biggest news stories of the week were about the sequester and another dose of winter weather in the Midwest. We're taking a look at those stories from the angle of food. On March 1st, the United States crashed over the so-called fiscal cliff, forcing the federal government to enact an enormous series of budget cuts designed to be untenable. Under the sequester, the operating budget for the USDA will be reduced by between $1 and $1.5 billion, in addition to the $700 million the department recently trimmed. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced that if the sequester is not resolved soon, the USDA will be forced to furlough meat inspectors. Without sufficient inspectors to monitor processes, some meat and poultry processing plants may eventually have to slow or halt production. Should that happen, meat shortages can be expected to follow, though it will likely take several months for consumers to notice a difference on store shelves. Also, the Farm Service Agency will have to decrease credit available to farmers by $34 million. As a result, an estimated 1,500 farmers in need of credit will likely be denied access. The FSA's credit line for small, family-owned farms will be hit hardest, with a cut of $5.4 million, resulting in 890 fewer loans. And while the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is exempt from sequester cuts, the Women, Infants, and Children Supplemental Nutrition Program, or WIC, stands to lose almost $700 million compared to its 2012 funding. And after a long, dry summer, parched soil has been struggling to support winter crops like hard red winter wheat. A major snowstorm that slammed the Midwest and East Coast this week has helped to change that, providing much-needed water to farmers. In Indianapolis, the seasonal snow total is now almost 25 inches. Last year, the total never reached double digits. Not every country is enjoying the wet weather, however. From Britain's too damp wheat crops to Fiji's concerns over strong storms affecting sugarcane, too much precipitation can wreak havoc on fields. Read more about these news stories on our website, eartheats.org. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook to get the latest food news all day. Just search for Earth Eats.
And today we bid a fond farewell to Mia Partlow, who's been a staple in Earth Eats for, several months now. She's moving on to greener pastures, and we wish her the best. Thanks for all the work, Mia.
Thank you. It's been fun.
The vast majority of the corn and soybeans in the United States grow from seeds that have been genetically modified. The technology is barely 30 years old, and the controversy surrounding it somewhat younger. But how did it even become possible? Amy Mayer has the story in part one of Harvest Public Media's three-part series called Science of the Seed.
To clarify, genetic modification, gene transformation, and genetic engineering, even biotechnology in an agricultural context, all refer to the same thing, taking a gene from one organism and inserting it into another. The scientists who discovered this technology back in the 1980s weren't even looking for ways to improve plants. Iowa State University agronomy professor Khan Wong was on the laboratory front line then, working with biochemists studying agrobacteria and plant tumors. Their goal was to better understand human cancer.
Maybe the plant cancer can give us some insight of other type of tumor, right? So their motivation is to cure human disease. So by working on the plant disease, they hope we'll get some knowledge, but, you know, they completely open up a different can of worm, right?
They discovered that certain agrobacteria could infect a plant, cause a tumor, and then leave the disease behind even after the bacteria was removed. It's like if you had strep throat, a bacterial infection, but then after your course of antibiotics, the strep is gone, but the sore throat remains forever. Sounds horrible, right? The researchers figured out that the evil bacteria had a particular plasmid that did the dirty deed, exiting the bacteria and then inserting itself into the plant cell nucleus, thereby permanently changing the plant's genetics.
You know, the light bulb switch on and say, hey, we have a tool.
The research focus moved away from human cancer. Scientists in both academic and industry labs set about determining how they could harness this tool to move good traits. Now an ag giant, Monsanto emerged early as a leader in biotech. The company demonstrated successful gene transfer in tomato plants in 1987. At Monsanto's Chesterfield Village Research Facility near St. Louis, tour guide Tom Hokeen picks up the story.
Basically, we have scientists that figured out, you know, that gene that the bacteria moved? Take the gene out. And we put a gene into the bacteria that we'd like to have moved. And the bacteria moved the gene for us.
He's in a long, dimly lit hallway, pointing to a large flat-screen monitor that shows an illustration of the soybean genome. He says the key is to identify a protein that has a desired effect on a plant and then figure out what gene to transfer to force the plant to produce that protein.
So what if I can find a protein that slows down sap flow in a corn plant? Doesn't need as much water. Drought. What if I can find a protein that allows a plant to photosynthesize a new way so I can spray Roundup over the top and not kill it?
Roundup is Monsanto's widely used herbicide, which previously farmers had to be careful not to spray on their crop plants because it would kill everything.
Do you know where they found the gene? The Roundup Ready gene.
In a bacteria?
Yes. Living in the wastewater treatment plant where we make Roundup.
In 1996, after meeting newly established regulatory requirements, Roundup Ready soybeans hit the market. So from aha moment to farmers' fields took less than 10 years. Today, genetic engineering is ubiquitous and controversial. With young technology, there's only so much data about safety and long-term impacts. And now that the technology is out of the lab and in people's pantries, some consumers are skeptical of the science and fearful of the implications.
Because there's some people call like Frankenseeds.
Mike Starr is the manager of the Seed Lab at Iowa State University, where this robot manages liquid samples to help with genetic testing of seeds. He says public perceptions vary by culture. In Europe, genetically modified products remain more closely regulated than here.
There's just more of a concern for some reason in Europe about you're messing with the genetics. And I've done a great deal of testing, and people have asked me whether I'm concerned about biotech seeds. Well, I'm not.
Starr has a small farm. Like many farmers, he's seen good results, even during last year's drought, from seeds containing modern traits, including genetically engineered ones. Within the scientific community, though, there is some recognition that the safety demonstrated today can't predict the ultimate impact on humans, plants, or the environment. Several states, including Missouri and Iowa, are considering mandatory labeling of foods containing genetically modified organisms, which is many. Over 90% of the country's corn and soybeans contain GMOs. That means they're in products from cereal to candy to soda. I'm Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Tune in next week for part two of Harvest Public Media's Science of the Seed series and a story about how expiring patents on GM technology will affect the seed industry and farmers. St. Patrick's Day is right around the corner, so our resident drink guy is back with us, Brad Dunn.
It is the lunch hour. We are experiencing a wonderful lunch rush here at the Uptown Cafe.
He's talking about Irish whiskey today. He has four of his favorites lined up on the bar, and none of them is Jameson. So Brad's going to introduce us to some lesser-known and perhaps better-tasting Irish whiskeys today.
When you're talking about St. Patty's, we're talking about beverages. The Irish don't mess around. lot of times in cocktail culture, we're talking about fancy cocktails and expressions of zest and the imagination of the mixologist. St. Patty's Day, all that pretty much goes out the window. We're talking about a shot of Irish whiskey, and we're talking about a pint of Guinness.
Sometimes the two combined.
Often the two combined, yes. So to start, though, with Irish whiskey, conceptually, is a lighter, smoother, easier-to-drink whiskey. Scotch would be sometimes thought of as more complex and smoky and darker and more mysterious. And in Ireland, as opposed to Scotland that has, say, over 100 distilleries, there are three distilleries in Ireland. Bushmills, Cooley, and Middleton are responsible for all these wonderful brands that we see across the globe. For example, Bushmills and Jameson is the number one brand in the United States. I think like something like 75 or 76% of the American market share. It's a very easy drinking. It's easy to enjoy several as opposed to ruminate over a single glass or two.
What I'm noticing here, also just looking at these, so this one, the
Napo Castle,
it's golden, but then the Powers here is more amber colored. I don't know if that's just my eye and the light playing off of that.
You know, it's a lot of marketing that goes into whiskeys. Most whiskeys, depending upon the age, are actually much lighter than the final product. A lot of them use caramel color. So, you know, the darker the whiskey, the richer. A lot of that has to do with aesthetics dictated by the marketing department. Let's talk about a couple here. And I normally don't talk about brands, but there's a couple that I'd like people to maybe think about.
So we're doing a little Irish whiskey taste test here.
Okay, so let's first try the 8-year Millers. The Millers is really, really buttery, smooth, soft.
You know, I was skeptical when you said it's buttery, but that really is. That's great.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah,
I love it. Let's go. Let's move on to the Slieve Foy.
This is the prettiest label by far.
This is a beautiful label. It's a single malt, and it's a little bit smoky. They use barley. It's a nod towards the Scottish style. So a little bit unusual for an Irish whiskey, but an example of the range of the style. And it is delicious. So,
okay,
so a little bit different.
Let's try this one. The smell immediately is different. Ooh, that just has more of a bite and a point than the Millers.
You want to try anything else?
Well, we could try this. We talked about this one a lot. So the Powers is the one that's beautifully amber-colored that I've learned from you, Brad. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's a better or worse whiskey. That it could potentially mean that there's coloring in it.
True, and don't quote me on that. I'm not exactly sure about the exact process, and sometimes they actually keep these things a secret, but just from the look alone and my own experience, it actually is one of the most popular whiskeys in Ireland, and it's just now starting to catch on in the States. So it's actually a couple of my bartenders' favorites, so they're very happy when they saw it on the bar.
So this could be your authentic Irish whiskey.
It's very authentic. It's a whiskey of the people.
I can't put my finger on what that taste is, but there's something really distinctive about that taste.
Well, it also has a little bit of sherry wood treatment. It may be a hint of, just a hint of red fruit sort of in the background. Yeah, it's a beautiful whiskey. I think any Irish whiskey tasting would be remiss without trying Redbreast. Redbreast is a pot still. It does have some of that sherry wood treatment. They're fairly reasonably priced. It's very, very much underrepresented.
Let's do it.
Let's go for the 15-year just because we're on the radio.
Fancy pants. So this is the 15-year. This should theoretically be more complex in the flavor?
You tell me.
Okay. I think that's my favorite of the bunch.
If I hadn't have told you it was 15 years, would you still...
Would it still be my favorite? I don't know. I get this. I don't know if it's woody. I have no idea what I'm tasting in the back of my throat, but that's the most unique aftertaste of all four of them.
It's gorgeous. I mean, I've never come across a really good explanation for what happens as spirits and wine and everything matures. Something very magical happens, and I think you could taste it, right?
Yeah, that was great. Boy, Brad, this has been a lot of fun.
Remember, folks, it's St. Patty's Day. It's not time to be fancy. It's time for a shot and a beer.
Brad Dunn is the sommelier and beverage director at the Uptown Cafe. Next week, he talks about beer cocktails, so be sure to come back for that.
away down in New Orleans as they bought a TV.
Coming up, farmers market products can be more expensive than the cheapest supermarket items available, but they're really healthful, extremely high quality, and it's also supporting local farmers in our area.
And the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market wants to make those foods available to more people. Katie Zukoff talks about a new program that doubles farmers market shoppers' SNAP benefits. Come back to learn more.
If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables cart off and sell.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
So we are at the Harmony School right when you walk in. I would say that this is the main entrance to the market. It's very cold here. Luckily, I've got a heater right next to me, but I'm still bundled up in my coat.
Rachel Bergman is the SNAP coordinator for Bloomington Winter Farmers Market and a master's student at Indiana University.
And so I'm actually at the information booth. Most of the time when people aren't around, I sit here and I drink my coffee. And I just started reading Deep Economy by Bill McKibben. Light reading all of the time. So,
she has a cash box full of wooden nickels that represent $1 in SNAP benefits. This is the first year the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market has accepted SNAP. And not just that, thanks to an anonymous donor, they're offering sort of a two-for-one deal. SNAP dollars are doubled at the winter market.
What that means is if you were to say you want to spend $20 at the market, I would only have to take $10 away from your monthly allotment of food stamps, which is really incredible, and it really extends being able to use your food stamps on local food a lot further.
Organizers are hoping this means more people from diverse economic backgrounds will be encouraged to shop at the market. Katie Zukoff is on the advisory council for the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market. She says this program ensures that no one is priced out of buying local foods.
Farmers market products can be more expensive than the cheapest supermarket items available, but they're really healthful, extremely high quality, and it's also supporting local farmers in our area. So we don't want this really high quality, fresh, and often organic food to be only available to the wealthiest people in Bloomington.
Isn't that good?
It is delicious. That's how I drink it. Like, I did get a shot glass, and that's it. We will take two whole milks and one whole yogurt, please.
Okay.
Plain.
$3.50, $3.57, and five is 12.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll be here next year.
I caught up with a regular farmers market shopper who uses her SNAP benefits to buy milk, bread, eggs, and salad greens for her family. She wishes to remain anonymous because of the stigma attached to food assistance. We've stopped at the Trader's Point Creamery table like she does every week. She says that if not for the market's program of doubling her SNAP benefits, she wouldn't be able to afford their products.
I was able to try it last week because I had the extra money, whereas normally I wouldn't have because it's $5 and the yogurt we buy at Kroger is like $3.69 or $2, I don't know. But then you get it home and you taste it and it's like, oh, I don't know. I mean, even organic to organic, they don't even taste the same.
She also purchased some fresh herbs from another vendor today at $4 to $5 a bag. That's a luxury item for her family. But it makes a huge difference in her cooking.
People say, oh, it's so much more expensive to buy organic. It's so much more expensive to buy fresh or local or quality. And it's not. Because you eat less, because the food is much higher quality, tastes better, more satisfying. You feel better about everything you make. And most everything you make is from scratch. Because as whole as you want to get it, that means you actually have to spend time in the kitchen.
The salad.
$4?
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
The program of doubled SNAP benefits will continue into the spring and summer when the market moves outdoors. The winter market is open through March on Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. till noon, at the Harmony School in Bloomington. You can find out more information by emailing wintermarket@localgrowers.org. And if you don't have a pen and paper handy right now to write that down, visit our website to find a link, eartheats.org. Our first recipe is for the classic French side dish with peas and bacon, or petit pois à la française, but this time with a twist.
And generally it's done with lettuce. But today I'm going to use that invasive herb that we've talked about. It's the wild garlic mustard. But if you want to, you could use some romaine lettuce, some bib lettuce instead of this. What we have here is blanched peas. We've got about a half cup of chopped bacon. We're using Mariah's bacon from Columbus, Indiana, which is crusted in peppercorns. To finish off my prep, I'm going to brunoise some lemon peel. Now, brunoise is a very fine dice. Okay, and what I like about doing it this way, instead of using, let's say, a file to do it, you can do a lemon zest with a file, is that you get these little crunchy bits of lemon peel that will kind of crunch into and it'll give you an explosion of lemon flavor. Okay, my pan is now hot. Now, anytime you're using butter in cooking, you want to start with a little bit of oil, and that will keep your butter from burning. Just let that melt. Okay, to that I'm going to add the bacon and the chopped green onions. There's nothing like bacon and onions. That aroma is wonderful. I'm going to add my wild garlic mustard greens or lettuce, and we'll probably add about a couple big handfuls of that.
Where did you pick these?
These actually grow right across the street from my parents' house. Usually they grow in a shaded area, and you know you can tell them by the little white flowers, the heart-shaped leaves. Okay, we're just going to cook these till they're wilted. Okay, we're going to add our peas. Teaspoon of sugar, which will bring out the natural sweetness of the peas. Okay, and that's petit pois à la française, but this time done a little different with Earth Eats wild garlic mustard grains.
Black-eyed peas are usually an ingredient associated with New Year's meals, but this dish was just too delicious to wait 10 months to share with you. This is Chef Orr's version of the traditional Southern dish, Hoppin' John. Slicing jalapenos?
Yeah, one of your favorites. Make it a little spicy.
You're not even taking the seeds out for me.
No. It's going to mellow out, though. We're going to do a dish called Hoppin' John today. Or I guess we should say Hoppin' John. It's a Southern dish. A lot of times you can find black-eyed peas fresh in the market now. You can see these right here from Sunny Creek Farms. Okay, a little bit of oil to get started. Again, not your expensive olive oil, a really inexpensive pumice olive oil or just some regular salad oil. We're going to add our garlic like we usually do first. Cook it till it's toasty. Again, that adds a depth of flavor to the dish, whereas if you just put it in and didn't really brown it at all, it would just be that garlic punch in your face flavor instead of a more rounded and toasty flavor. Okay, next we're going to add a mirepoix. A mirepoix is basically onions, celery, carrots, and then you can add leeks and other vegetables if you'd like. And they give you the aromatic vegetable flavor for soups, for stocks, for stews, for all kinds of dishes. So if you see mirepoix, and it's generally a rough cut. It doesn't need to be really finely diced and pretty. It's a rustic cut. Okay, add just a touch of water to that, and that's going to allow that to kind of steam and cook quickly. I'm going to add a few more flavorings. I've got some diced tomatoes, diced peppers, those jalapenos we were looking at earlier. And just kind of give this a big whiff. Can you smell the toastiness of the garlic?
I sure can, yeah. I mean,
it really makes a difference. Even if you take, let's say, a can of red sauce from the grocery store, if you toast some garlic, throw in a little rosemary until it crackles and pops, and then add that canned tomato sauce, it's going to taste like you've been cooking at home all day. It's going to make the house smell great. You can fool your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, wife, ex-wife, future ex-wife. Okay. So now we're going to add the peas. I'm going to throw in a bay leaf. And we're going to let this stew for a little while until we cook the rawness out of the peas. And that will take about 4 or 5 minutes.
4 to 5 minutes in radio time.
Let's hope these are done. Okay, so you want to just taste one of the black-eyed peas. Okay, we're going to add a spoon of butter.
A healthy spoon of butter.
Thank you.
And so instead of using the traditional ham hock and bacon and all of the pork products, we're making this a little lighter and healthier, but we still want to have a little richness. So that's why we're adding the butter. And I'm going to finish it with some white rice, and then I'm adding the kale or collard greens, whatever kind of greens you got around. And it's beautiful. You want to add those greens at the very last minute so they stay nice and vibrant colored. And then traditionally it's served with cornbread, but I've got my great-grandmother's famous biscuits that we're going to serve it with. Okay, one more little taste. You can see the liquid's pretty much being absorbed out of there. I think you're going to like this. And the
bass keeps running, running. Find both of these recipes and photos of the finished dishes on our website. Also on the homepage these days are recipes for a spinach mushroom soup and homemade chocolate truffles. Nice. Visit us at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Rachel Bergman, Ayabon Binder, Brad Dunn, Sarah Gordon, Liz Leslie, Mia Partlow, Daniel Orr, Katie Zukoff, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thank you for tuning in today. Till next week, happy eating, folks. I'm Annie Corrigan.